You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour 2 on this Wednesday. NBA draft coming up tonight. Come on in, stay a while. Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated will be covering the draft. What does he think is going to happen? Where is LaMelo Ball going to go? I got him going to Golden State. I think Golden State takes James Wiseman, but if I'm Golden State, I'd take LaMelo Ball. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Trevor Lawrence is back practicing. Wake, Duke postponed. Wichita State's Greg Marshall has tapped out. They have decided to part ways there. Some serious allegations attached to him, and somehow he walks away with nearly $8 million. Oh. It feels like that would violate your contract or your buyout, or there's a clause in there if you happen to do something like choke one of your assistant coaches, something like that. I don't know if that language was in there. If you choke one of your assistant coaches, you don't get paid the remainder of your contract. His next contract will probably have that fine print in there. Yes, Tom.
If you have players with conduct detrimental to the team or embarrassing the league or the organization, how could coaches not be subject to those same type of penalties?
He's got a contract detrimental to the team, and his conduct was detrimental to the team as well. McLovin has a poll question. Are we staying with that, McLovin?
So would you draft LaMelo Ball? I thought it'd be like 50-50. 79% say no.
Okay. I'm in the minority. I've been there before.
Dude's got to go top three. Obviously, the NBA feels they're going to draft him.
Yeah. I would take him. I would. I think the upside is can be significant there. I think Anthony Edwards is a very safe pick there. James Wiseman is exactly that. He's a wise man. He is a very mature kid by all accounts. And is he able to fit in today's NBA? How would he fit in with Golden State style? But I only saw one game, but it was an entire game. I saw Oregon. I saw Anthony Edwards play one entire game. Anthony Edwards is a very safe pick and looks like he could be. He's built like James Harden. I don't know if he's going to be a great scorer, but he's a very good two-way player. You just don't have that rubber stamp. Man, I know that guy's going to be great. If I said I would give you the top eight picks of the last 6 drafts, and I'll take everybody after that. Would you be more willing to go, I want the first 8 picks, or you get every other pick after that? I'm going to take all the other picks after that. Go back to that Anthony Bennett draft, McLovin. Because Anthony Bennett, ugh. I watch UNLV play. I watch them in their conference tournament. I didn't know Anthony Edwards was any good. There were times when I would watch Anthony Bennett, and I'd go, is that guy supposed to be great? And even in that league, I went, okay, seems to do a couple of good things. He didn't do anything great. And then all of a sudden, the Cavs go, they're taking Anthony Bennett. I went, oh, my gosh, what did I miss here? Because I loved Victor Oladipo. In fact, Mannix came on, and I said, I'll take Victor Oladipo in his future in the NBA. McLovin, do you have that draft?
Yes. It's so bottom heavy, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
It starts Bennett, then Victor Oladipo,
yep.
Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Len.
Cody Zeller, Alex Len?
Oh, they're tall.
Then my Sixers, mid-process. Oh, actually, it says that New Orleans took New Orleans Noel, but they feel like they traded him to the Sixers somehow.
Yeah.
Then Ben McLemore, who... he was on the Rockets last year. I was surprised to see. We love that guy. Remember him?
Coming out of Kansas.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I didn't realize he was a top 10 pick. He was 8 to the Lions. I mean, the Tigers. I mean, the Pistons.
Bears. Oh, my.
Then Trey Burke, who the Sixers should have kept, is number 9. Yeah. CJ McCollum, 10. Michael Carter-Williams.
But if I gave you the first 8 picks got everybody else.
By the way, Michael Carter-Williams went 11. I think he was rookie of the year. And he just
couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
He couldn't. First game, I think he had a triple-double.
Yeah.
He couldn't shoot.
Then Giannis, 15. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got Giannis and CJ McCollum. There's a few other players in there. Yes, Paul.
Yeah, there's a bunch of good players who were drafted after 10. Steven Adams, Oklahoma City. He was drafted 12th. He's had a very nice career.
Yeah.
Rudy Gobert was 27th.
Yeah.
Dennis Schroeder, 17th.
Schroeder. Not Schrader.
Sure.
Try it again, Paul. No, doesn't it have the umlauts?
Pretty sure it's Schroeder.
It's Dennis Schroeder.
Dennis Schroeder.
What was the Die Hard scene?
Shoot the glass.
I thought it was. Never mind.
Who's the kid from the Peanuts gang? That's Schroeder.
Schroeder, right? That plays the Schroeder. Yeah. Played a mean piano. I love Schroeder. All right, we'll talk.
Yeah. By the way, also Tim Hardaway, Rudy Gobert, probably was going on. There's like 10 guys who are Max Alan Crabb.
No, you can't put Alan Crabb in there. Alan Crabb.
Dude made an $80 million contract.
Oh, I know that. There's a lot of guys who have.
We got to get Ethan on. There must be top good picks in the top eight of those drafts, right? Of like the last 8 years. None of them are jumping to mind, but.
Yeah, you start to wonder, like, these are the guys that teams that are, you know, they miss on. The bad teams are up there for a reason, and then they whiff on these picks. And then you never recover from something like that, where you could have had this, you know. Imagine if the Cavs had taken Anthony Bennett when they took him. He'd still be there. You might be building around, if you took somebody, C.J. McCollum, there's a couple of players, obviously the Greek Freak, but there's players that you go, boy, you could have built around those, and then you miss when you're up that high. Yeah, McLevin.
I don't think the Sixers got it right in 17 when they traded from 3-1 to get Markelle Fultz.
They did not. That did not go well.
Yeah, but one, Anthony Davis was the number one pick in 2012.
Yep.
He was pretty good. And Karl Anthony Towns, 15.
Good player. Yep, good, solid player.
Is DeAndre Ayton, is he veering towards a bust or a good player? You're the only one I know who watches the Suns.
I would say that he has... The key to the Phoenix Suns being a great team is going to be DeAndre Ayton, in my opinion. Because it feels like they have a nice starting five. Chris Paul's in there. We know what Booker is. I need to know if DeAndre Ayton can go next level. I mean, 18-11, I'll take it. I want to know if... And he's only 21 or 22. I want to know if he can go, 26-12. And you know, what kind of shots, can he extend his range a little bit there? But he should be great. You take him number one overall. James Harden is one of the more unique stars in all the sports. We know he's a great player, but I can't put him into a box or a category because he's not fast, but he can blow by you. He can get his shot. I wouldn't call him ripped, but he seems as strong as anyone covering him. He's a ball hog, but... He's averaged over 11 assists a game for a season. He's an anomaly, an aberration. And now he's at a crossroads here because he wants out of Houston. He turned down a two-year extension worth $103 million. Wants to join Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. And that doesn't mean the Rockets are going to cooperate. But if they do pull off the deal, there's still a lot of questions about Harden. Is he going to continue to play hero ball? Is it going to be about James Harden? If I'm Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving... There is no way I want to be around that. I truly believe this, that James Harden understands I've done everything individually you can do in this game. I have to do something team-wise. He wasn't necessarily a winner in college. Oklahoma City, they had a chance. He was the sixth man of the year. You go to Houston, you create this phenomenon, you create this must-see TV style of offense. But after that, it's all done. There's nothing that James Harden does in a game anymore where you go, wow. Unless it's something negative where he misses 15 consecutive three-pointers. That's it. You've seen him dominate. You've seen him put up 50. You've seen him dish out 11 assists. He can get by anybody, get a shot against anybody. I was watching yesterday and actually slowed it down. He was being guarded by Anthony Davis. Now, Anthony Davis is 6'11 in a wingspan that probably makes him 7'10. James Harden gets his shot, gets his jumper. He creates just enough separation, gets just enough lift, and it's amazing to watch that. He can get a shot against the smallest guy, the tallest guy, the quickest guy, and now I think he understands, what am I and who am I? And what do I want to be? Imagine he wins a championship. We look at James Harden differently. If they adapt the style of offense you saw with Golden State, if James Harden and Kevin Durant talk and say, hey, I'll do it, you do it, Kyrie, what do you think about this? Moving the ball, passing it 4 or 5 times down the floor. Get movement in there. And I wonder if James Harden is saying, at this stage of my career, do I want to average 30 again? Do I want to average 22? How about 22 in a title? How about 22 in playing meaningful basketball? At some point, I think that James Harden will or has come to that realization. I truly believe that. And it's not that he can't do it. Go back and watch Oklahoma City when he was sixth man. Great off the ball. He didn't have to have the ball. Got the ball, score. But if you're going to go to Brooklyn, and I don't know if it's happening anytime soon, but if you're going, the style of offense, I think, will be more based on what you saw with Golden State than what you saw with the Houston Rockets. Yes, Todd?
And where's Chris Paul on the championship realization? It's all nice to live in Paradise Valley and you're going to be a mentor to these young guys, but where does he think he's going in his last few years in the NBA as far as any shot at a title?
Well, I think if Milwaukee was interested, then you got a shot at a title. Chris Paul knew Oklahoma City is going to rebuild, and Phoenix was willing to take him on to give a little maturity to that lineup there. I don't know if he went, hey, how do I win a title? I thought Chris Paul somehow, some way was going to end up with the Lakers. I just thought it would be one of those LeBron, hey, let's somehow make this work. I want you to come in. Rondo's gone. I want you to come in. Like, that's what I thought. But by going to Phoenix, he may not have had another option there. But I thought Milwaukee would have been a great destination for him. Phone calls, 877-3DP-SHOW, email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Let's see. Jimmy in Chicago. Hi, Jimmy. What's on your mind today?
What's up, Dan?
Hey, bud.
Good. If I'm the Wizards, I'm pressing that yes button 1,000 times to get Westbrook.
Yes,
definitely. Solely because of the injury history. I mean, John Wall, I don't even remember the last time I saw him play. Did he even play a game last year? Like, I feel like I haven't seen him play in like three seasons. And I've never even seen the Wizards on national TV, like, or TNT or ESPN. So I just thought that was funny. And then the Anthony Edwards player comp to Vince Carter. When I heard that, I kind of just got nauseous. Like, the dude's only 6'4". And I haven't seen him actually play a minute, so I will YouTube him later on just to check his game on him. But is he that athletic?
Yes. He can get his shot. I will say this, Jimmy. Thanks for the phone call. He can get a shot. He can get you a basket. Yeah, McClellan.
But nobody's as athletic as Vince Carter.
No, that's not a fair comparison.
I saw the Ringer had Oladipo as a comp, who's a little smaller than Vince Carter. He also had Eric Gordon. And
I could see Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
I could see that a little bit more. I mean, that's not fair to see.
These are three radically different players, though.
Yeah, but he's not Vince Carter. Yes, see.
Not only Vince Carter, but prime Vince Carter.
I know. They didn't even say downside of career Vince Carter. Vince Carter.
Prime Vince Carter.
Wow. Jesse in Los Angeles. Hey, Jess, welcome back. What do you have?
Hey, good morning, DP.
Hey,
thanks,
bud,
for taking my call today.
Yep.
Hey, bud. Have a comment on the balls and a question for you.
All right.
On LeVar Ball, as Seton is kind of saying, is he's just constantly putting a target on his kid's back. And imagine if you heard that in your Lonzo Ball's daughter's mom, and you got to go to Thanksgiving or Christmas for that clown show. But on the Kings, my Sacramento Kings fanhood, the Kings mock draft shows them going after Killian Hayes about 12, whose player comp is, as you mentioned, D'Angelo Russell or Goran Dragic. And it's just like, if they go that route, it's bye-bye De'Aaron Fox. Hello, 5 more years of irrelevance.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not the New York Jets, but is there any hope for this franchise?
I thought, and thanks for the phone call, Jess. I thought last year my Kings were going to make the playoffs. But, you know, Vlade was not good in that job. You got an owner who, I don't know if he's a positive or a negative, but you know, you got to have something there. There has to be somebody there that you go, I can trust that they're going to make the right decision. And they haven't had that. And some of their draft picks. I like De'Aaron Fox, but you know, who else are you going to have? Buddy Hield wants out. Marvin Bagley is average. I thought that they could cobble together a lineup that would be competitive on a night-in, night-out basis. Yeah, McLovin.
You know, Bagley's numbers are great on the rare occasion he's on the court. He can't stay on the court at all. Is that?
Well, that would be a problem.
Yeah.
Because,
but he's another one. It doesn't matter how good your center is. Centers can't win, right? Why do they keep drafting these centers?
I don't want a center. I mean, James Wiseman, I don't know how Golden State would use him or whoever's going to draft him. And he might be a perfect guy for them. But I don't want a center. I can find centers. It's, you know, getting guys who are matchup nightmares for you. Guys who do something different. What is the ceiling there? Is James Wiseman going to be a great shooter? I know Jay Billis loves James Wiseman. And I trust Billis when it comes to, you know, assessing talent. And he called me a great shooter yesterday. So obviously I think Billis knows talent. Shu in Minnesota. Hey, Shu.
Hey, DP. Hey, one time, first time.
Yep.
5'11", 185.
All right.
It is classic Timberwolves to have the number one pick in this draft of all drafts.
Mm.
My advanced YouTube scouting skills led me to be 100% in on Anthony Edwards until you see quotes like, when asked when he got into basketball, I'm still not really into it. He says, I love basketball. Yeah, it's what I do.
I know.
Boy, if that doesn't inspire confidence in a potential number one pick.
ESPN.com, read the entire story because this quote is standing out to people that – you got somebody who doesn't love the sport. I always go back to Ryan Leaf. Ryan Leaf out of Washington State, great in the Rose Bowl. I don't think he loved football. I think he was good in football, but he didn't say it. You know, Anthony Edwards is a talented player, but read the entire article and then tell me if you come away with, boy, that guy doesn't really love playing basketball. He grew up in a tough environment, lost his mom, lost his grandmother. And he's a good kid. I heard him being interviewed on the Mothership on the Jump a couple of days ago. And I really liked him. I liked what I heard and how he sounded. And that's why when that quote came out, I went, that doesn't sound like the guy that I heard on the Mothership. Sometimes these quotes taken out of context, all of a sudden it stands out for a little bit more than what it really should. And that was my take on it. I thought, okay, I'm going to be fair to him. I'm assuming that he does want to play basketball. Football is one of his great loves, but he's going to be a well-compensated basketball player. Yeah, Paul.
Do you remember that really good wide receiver out of Colorado who ended up playing for the Washington Redskins, Michael Westbrook? Remember,
yeah.
He was pretty good for a couple of years?
Yeah.
He did an interview, I think it was at the draft or just before the draft, and they asked him about, was it always his dream to play in the NFL? He goes, no, I've never watched an NFL game before. I've never been to one or watched one on TV. He goes, yeah. Because I just go out and play football. And I remember everyone was like, whoa, how do you, you're 21 years old and you've never watched an NFL game before. It wasn't exactly a red flag, but it was weird to hear someone say.
He also beat up his teammate, too.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Stephen Davis, the running back at Auburn.
Yeah, Stephen Davis. Yeah. And now I don't watch any football, but boy, I love to beat up teammates. Yes, McLovin.
That's fine. I think I read that Trevor has barely ever watched
Lawrence?
Yeah, of NFL football,
what?
Too. There it is. I mean, he wouldn't say that, but college guys, some stars hate watching NFL football. It's the most bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Like guys who play, it's like you don't want to go home and listen to sports talk radio.
No, I do not. I listen to it growing up, but when I'm done with the show, the last thing I want to hear is somebody else pontificate. I've been, a gas bag for 3 hours each day. I don't want to listen to somebody else tell me everything that I need to know. I've already done that too, America. We'll take a break here. We'll talk to Chris Mannix. He'll join us coming up. I'm sure Mannix will not be all in on my thoughts on LaMelo Ball. I'm sure. And Ricky Rubio, his idol, just got traded. Got traded in to Oklahoma City in the Chris Paul deal. 19 after the hour, this is the Dan Patrick Show. Sleep number is so important. Quality sleep more important than ever. As we head into the wintertime, it's a natural immunity booster, but also helps with energy and recovery. And when you have this bed, you get a sleep number. And there are two beds in one, so you and your significant other will have a sleep number. And that is the firmness of the mattress. Because people say, what is the sleep number? How do I get the sleep number? You're going to know it when you lie down on this mattress. And the people there at Sleep Number are so helpful. If you call them up, you can go online, go in-store. And they're going to help you understand why this is more than just, hey, it's a bed. It's a mattress. No, it's more than that. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed, game-changing sleep. And right now, they have the ultimate Sleep Number event. You can save 50% off on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed. And for a limited time only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/Patrick. So that Ultimate Sleep Number event is going on. Save 50% off on the Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Sleep Number, the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. I don't care what Todd says. I think the phone calls have been good today. I don't know what you have against this audience, but Monday you said the same thing.
Yeah, they need to step it up a little bit. So.
By the way, don't send your calendars in for us to autograph. Due to COVID, we don't want mail coming in. We did sign 250 of the calendars, but people paid extra for those. Those are going out for Christmas, but we can't do it this year. You're going to get the calendars. And I'm glad you ordered them, but we had 250 that we were going to autograph, and that was it. So don't send your calendars in. There's no guarantee that you'll get them back. And Mario basically said that he didn't want to be responsible for that. But I'm going to have a limited group of people working here over the holidays, so we're not even going to be able to get to those. Just letting you know, I don't want anybody's... I mean, this could ruin a Christmas, Paulie, if you get a calendar and then you don't get it back.
Yeah, because you sent it here, it's just going to sit.
Yes, it will. It'll sit in Mario's room, his inbox. Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer, ready to cover the NBA draft. Let's get it out of the way, Mannix. Your favorite player in the draft, 5 years from now, when we play this soundbite, you're going to look like a star.
I still think that James Wiseman will be the next great big man in the NBA.
Is that important?
Sure. I mean, I think the value of the big man is still really important. It's just the big man has to do a lot more than what he did in, you know, the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, if Wiseman can prove that he can step out beyond the three-point line, which I think he will, he's going to add that to a repertoire that already includes incredible athleticism, defensive instincts that will make him an impact player on that end right away. Look, we can talk about this, but I think Golden State is still fielding offers for that number two overall pick. But if they stay at number two, I believe Wiseman will be in Golden State.
Yeah, but if he's that obvious, it's that obvious he's going to be great. Why would Golden State pass on something this obvious?
I mean, because if you have an opportunity to acquire a player that fits your championship window more closely, you certainly have to lock in on that. I mean, Wiseman is basically going to be off for almost two full seasons by the time he gets back onto the floor. I mean, he only played those three games at Memphis last year. So there's going to be a considerable learning curve for James Wiseman. If you're Golden State, you're looking at 2-3 years with this group where you could potentially win three championships if you get the right guy. So if you're the Warriors, you have to consider all veteran players available. The problem is, I'm really not seeing those type of impact players materialize as trade targets right now. Tommy Shepard with the Wizards came out in a conference call yesterday and said Bradley Beal is not available. Bradley Beal is not going to go anywhere. And he's been saying that for the better part of the last 6 months. So it would be a big reversal on that part. I don't think Harden's in play for Golden State, at least not right now. So I don't think there's a deal for them that makes sense on draft night.
I like LaMelo Ball. I like him. I know that there's other things that come with that, but I do think that ceiling-wise, I think with Golden State, that would be the perfect, you know, ownership, management, coach, star players. And I will say this, his dad is extremely selfish, but his sons are very unselfish when they're on the floor. You might be able to correct that shot a little bit with Steph and Clay there, and Steve Kerr, a great shooter as well. I know he doesn't play defense, but defense is an attitude. And I think he could be like his brother. Tell me why you would not take LaMelo Ball.
Well, I love the playmaking. I think he's going to be spectacular in that area. I don't love his shooting, and I certainly don't love his shot. I mean, if you watch that LaMelo shot, it reminds you in some ways of Joakim Noah's shot, which was, you know, useful during Joakim's career. He was a solid He developed into a solid perimeter player. But, you know, for a point guard and somebody that you need to be a consistent three-point threat, I think it's going to need some significant changes, just like his brother, Lonzo, needed some changes to his shot when he came into the NBA. Look, it's not a deal breaker, but it makes it a risky pick at number one. I don't know. I honestly don't know what Minnesota is going to do at number one. I'm pretty sure they're going to keep that pick.
No, if I'm Golden State, I look at him because I got a guy who can fit in that system, come off the bench, but he can absorb the Warriors' way. And I think that of all the places for him to go, that would be the place that I could see him really benefiting.
Two things. One, I do think he's still in play for number one. I think that's still possible with Minnesota, which would make it extremely uncomfortable with D'Angelo Russell to get shoved out potentially by another Ball brother. I mean, that would be a tough look for D'Angelo. I don't see it in Golden State, Dan. I
mean, yeah, maybe not.
I mean, long term, maybe. But if you're the Warriors, are you really thinking long term right now? I mean, you've got your star court is just in their early 30s. Draymond a little bit older. I think you've got to focus on guys that can help you win right now. And I don't know that. Look, you can potentially play if you drafted Anthony Edwards. You can potentially play with Anthony Edwards, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. I just don't see a scenario where you could really play Steph, LaMelo, and Klay Thompson.
Oh, I agree with that.
But the number of years, Dan, it would take to get LaMelo on the same page, you're just wasting prime. And you're wasting the prime years of your guys. I think you've got to get better right away.
He's Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated NBA senior writer. The James Harden situation, now Russell Westbrook. When I saw that maybe the Wizards and the Rockets could swap John Wall for Russell Westbrook, and I thought, if I'm Houston, why the hell do I want John Wall? Now, if I'm Washington and I got Russell Westbrook, I'd do that in a second if I'm the Wizards. But if I'm the Rockets, I wouldn't trade anybody right now. I think they have leverage, certainly, with Harden. I need another team interested in Harden before I make any move there. What do you think, Chris?
Completely agree. It would be knee-jerk for the Rockets to make a deal for James Harden right now. He's under contract for the next 3 years. And, yes, he sent some pretty powerful messages to the organization by turning down that two-year extension, as Adrian Wojnarowski reported, at $50 million per. I mean, that's a pretty strong message. And look, he's communicated that he would like to play in Brooklyn. So, you know, the smoke signals are getting a lot stronger these days from James Harden, but that can't be a factor if you're the Houston Rockets. You have got to get multiple teams into a bidding war. Maybe that doesn't happen until midseason.
Yeah.
You know, maybe things have to shake out, where maybe Washington struggles and Bradley Beal does become available. Maybe there's another player we're not talking about that does become available. More importantly, if you're the Rockets, you have to address the Westbrook situation first. Like, you can't do anything with James Harden until you figure out if somebody will take Westbrook and what you will get back for Westbrook. So one of the reasons the Wizards thing didn't go anywhere is because – my understanding is the Wizards were like, we'll talk about a John Wall, Russell Westbrook swap. And the Rockets come back saying, well, we want picks too. Like, no, we'll take your distressed asset for our distressed asset, but we're not going to start giving you the kind of compensation that you gave to Oklahoma City to get him in the first place. So it's going to be a tough needle to thread because I don't know that the market is there for Russell Westbrook. I mean, people keep pointing at the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks might have been this stupid 5 years ago, but I don't think they're as dumb anymore. And from everything I've been told out of New York, they're really not interested or focused on Russell Westbrook. Charlotte might, but if Wiseman goes number two and Anthony Edwards goes number one, Charlotte's going to jump on LaMelo Ball. And if they take LaMelo Ball, that would probably pull them out of the race for Russell Westbrook. So a Charlotte team without a young point guard in the draft might be Houston's best chance to make a deal for Westbrook, at least in the next couple of weeks.
I mentioned this a couple of minutes ago. I think James Harden is at the point in his career where he can't do anything more individually than he's already done. Team-wise, we know he can. And maybe he senses that, can we do what Golden State did? Can I go with KD, Kyrie, and we create that? Because when he was sixth man in Oklahoma City, Harden was wonderful off the ball. And I don't know if he's at the point where, how about I average 22 and we're actually a factor in winning a championship here. I don't know if that's part of this, that he sort of senses, I'm 31, time is sort of running out with me to be recognized as one of the great players of all time. He's one of the great scorers of all time. He'll never be labeled one of the great players of all time. It'll be great scorers of all time. And maybe that's starting to sink in a little bit.
Dan, I think you're dead on with the assessment of kind of who James Harden is. And Scott Brooks has told me this story a couple of times where, you know, Harden in Oklahoma City was fine coming off the bench, like had no issue playing, you know, third fiddle to Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. And every time I kind of repeat this, people will say, oh, that was a lifetime ago. James Harden is a different player. He wasn't the alpha, the three-time scoring champion, the MVP that he is right now. That's all true. But my understanding of James Harden is that that mindset is still within him. He's not going to go to a team, any team, and demand it be his team, especially not a team that has Kevin Durant on it, a player he's still been close with over the years. People forget, Dan, that James Harden didn't leave Oklahoma City because he needed a bigger role. He left Oklahoma City because they wouldn't pay him. And that remains one of the great mistakes of the Oklahoma City franchise as you go back in history. They wouldn't give him the full max contract, and Houston would. I don't have too many doubts, Dan, that if you put James Harden on a team with Harden and Kyrie and Kevin Durant, I don't have many doubts that Harden will be able to fit in. Kyrie's a different story. I'm not sure how that works with Kyrie. But I think Harden would be fine in that situation because, to your point, he values winning. He wants a chance to win. That's why he wants out of Houston, and that's why he's angling for Brooklyn.
I like what the Lakers did with Dennis Schroeder. I think that's a sneaky, great pickup. He's, what, 27? You're going to probably lose Rondo. Caldwell Pope will come back. Anthony Davis will come back. Do the Lakers do anything else here in the offseason or in the draft?
Offseason, yes. I mean, they are going to go bargain shopping with their exceptions to see if there are those players out there that want to chase a championship. And we know that there are players like that every year. The Schroeder deal was kind of their one chip to play because they had Danny Green's contract and they had a pick to deal. So they kicked the tires on a few situations there where they talked to Milwaukee about Eric Bledsoe. This deal ultimately, I think, is better for them because Schroeder is still a player on the rise. He's a terrific catch-and-shoot three-point shooter, which really matters when you play off of LeBron James. And he's coming off the best season of his career where he probably should have won the NBA Sixth Man of the Year award. So this, I think, is a big-time addition because I do think they will lose Rondo, either the Clippers or somebody else in free agency as he seeks that one more big deal. I also, Dan, I like this deal for Oklahoma City. And when this deal happened and the deal in Milwaukee happened with Jrue Holiday, I'm thinking like, it's going to be like May of 2027 when Sam Presti and David Griffin are the only people in the lottery room. It's like the two of them because they have all the picks. Like they keep hoarding all these picks and they're going to wind up with everybody's lottery pick and be in the room by themselves in the summer of 2027.
The great Chris Mannix. Thank you, Chris. Sports Illustrated's NBA senior writer. Have fun tonight. We'll talk to you soon.
Ricky Rubio to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sorry about that.
I got a new jersey.
Sorry about that. Yeah, he got a lot of jerseys, Ricky Rubio's name on it. Thank you, Chris. We'll come back. Mike Florio is going to join us. This bizarre story of the defensive back, former defensive back of the Giants. I thought he might be going to jail, and then his agent is going to jail perhaps for extortion, and then the Kansas City Chiefs end up picking up the defensive back. I mean, he may end up getting a ring. Like, it's just such a bizarre story. And Antonio Brown could be in trouble again. He may have violated his contract. Have that for you coming up with Florio right after this. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. More phone calls coming up, 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle, @DP Show. I saw this story. I followed this story. I still don't understand this story. And that's why I bring in Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk Live, the co-host with Chris Sims, every morning, Monday through Friday, preceding this show on Peacock. It's the story of DeAndre Baker, who played for the Giants, or at least I think he played for the Giants. And now he's with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's got a chance to play for a Super Bowl ring. Who would have thought we'd be in this position, Mike? So explain to the audience the DeAndre Baker situation.
Well, it's funny. You don't understand it. You assume I understand it. I'm not sure anybody understands.
You're a lawyer.
There was an incident back in May involving DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar where the allegation was that they committed armed robbery at a house party. And as the days and weeks went by, there became a sense that maybe the witnesses slash victims were changing their stories and maybe people were seeking money. And it all got very confusing and murky. And it's entirely possible that something happened that shouldn't have happened. But once the witnesses essentially are disqualified by this financial angle, and you had a lawyer representing the witnesses slash victims who ended up being arrested for extortion, you know, it's possible something happened that didn't happen, and then somebody saw an opportunity to make some money off of it. And the next thing you know, the whole case falls apart because no one can testify now because everyone's been corrupted by this one way or the other. So the end result is Quentin Dunbar never got charged. He's still playing and has been playing for the Seahawks. Baker was charged, was cut by the Giants, was reinstated by the league from the commissioner exempt list, and now is a member of the Chiefs practice squad. So who knows what ultimately did happen on that evening in May? But the end result is there's no one who can take a witness stand and ultimately provide the kind of evidence that would convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt. So no one's getting charged. No one's going to jail, except maybe people who are involved in this scam to turn the situation into a payday.
But I thought the lawyer is he involved, charged with extortion? Is the lawyer for these two, DeAndre Baker, is he in trouble too?
Well, it's the lawyer. This is where it gets even weirder. It's the lawyer representing the witnesses slash victims who got charged with extortion. But then the lawyer for Quentin Dunbar was under scrutiny for being involved in this effort to pay off witnesses. See, there's a gray area there between paying off witnesses to influence testimony and also seeking the money because you're extorting money from these potential criminal defendants. And basically, everyone ends up being compromised. And the only winners in all this are the guys who very well may have committed a crime, but it's never going to be proven because you have no one that you can now put on a witness stand that anyone's going to believe because it's all been tainted by the profit motive that pops up when people realize, hey, you know, that crime I just reported, maybe I can change my testimony if somebody's going to give me some money to do so.
DeAndre Baker ends up with the Kansas City Chiefs on their practice squad. Is he any good?
Well, you know, he wasn't great last year, but he was a first-round pick. So somebody saw something in the guy to bring him into the NFL at a fairly high level. And if the Chiefs believe that they can work him into their system, and that's the thing about the practice squad, that you got 16 guys because of the COVID protocols. You have a spot to burn. Bring him in. See what he has. It's low risk. It's low money. And if you like him, you bring him up to the active roster and you put him on the field. If you don't like him, you just sever ties and move on to someone else. So I think it's smart for the Chiefs to do it. And yeah, he now has an opportunity to finish a very difficult and challenging year with a potential Super Bowl appearance.
Will the newest allegations against Antonio Brown be enough for the league to step in? First of all, explain what happened and did he violate his contract already?
Well, and you've got three different parties that may care about what happened on October 15. You've got the Buccaneers, who already have issued a statement making it clear that they don't care. You've got the league, and then you've got the authorities who have responsibility for Antonio Brown's felony probation dating back to the incident in January with the driver of a moving truck. He's on probation for a felony. So one false move, and you get thrown in jail. So what happened on October 15, allegedly, he broke a security camera at a gated community he resides at in Florida. He allegedly threw a bike at a security guard shack. The homeowners association decided not to press charges, but police concluded there was probable cause to find him guilty of misdemeanor criminal mischief. So from the authorities' perspective, is that enough to attack his probation? That's one question that hasn't been resolved yet. From the league's perspective, this guy's a repeat offender. Is this enough? Even if he's not charged, and we've seen guys get suspended without ever being arrested, like Ezekiel Elliott, is this enough? But there's a separate issue, Dan. Under the terms of the personal conduct policy, if you're involved in an incident, even if you're not arrested, you've got an obligation to tell the league, and you can be disciplined separately for that. And the league yesterday, through its in-house media conglomerate, reported that it didn't know about this. So Brown didn't tell them about it when it happened. That could be a separate ground for disciplining him based upon his history, suspending him. You know, he's still got this open issue arising from the civil lawsuit alleging sexual assault and rape that the league just kicked the can. They didn't do anything. They're going to wait and see what the court does. They didn't want to take a position one way or the other, which is kind of ludicrous to me. If you're going to have an in-house justice system, at some point you need to issue a verdict. Their verdict is, we'll just wait and see what happens. But if they are motivated to go after him, they already have enough just based on the fact, if it's true, as reported by NFL media, that he didn't disclose it to the league. So look, at the end of the day, Dan, we've seen this time and again over the past 10 years. The league is going to do what it wants, when it wants, how it wants. And it has enough cover to do basically whatever it chooses to do in any one case. So we sit back and we wait and see whatever inclination they may have. If they want to suspend him again, they can. If they want to look the other way, they can. And we just wait and see what happens.
We're talking to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live co-host. I brought this up when Alex Smith got in the game a couple of weeks ago. And I said to him, do you have your comeback Player of the Year award speech ready? And then all of a sudden I had somebody say, well, you're forgetting about Ben Roethlisberger. And I thought, okay, Ben coming back from arm surgery, he's, you know, I guess implanted himself in the MVP candidacy race. But Alex Smith came back from nearly dying, nearly losing his leg, to throwing for over 300 yards in a game. Like, I don't know if it matters to either one of these players winning comeback Player of the Year award, but it feels like what Alex Smith did is a whole lot different than what Ben Roethlisberger has done, even though Ben has played at a very high level and they're undefeated. Where do you stand?
Well, I agree with you. Coming back from near amputation and near death is significant, and it's unprecedented. We're always going to have somebody who comes back from an injury and plays well. So I think the fact that this one is so different sets it apart. And part of the problem is nobody knows what it means to be the comeback Player of the Year. Ryan Tannehill won it last year. Shereen Williams, who works with us at PFT, said, what did he come back from? Stinking? Does that make you the comeback Player of the Year? I remember when Matthew Stafford won it. He never was in a position to be coming back. It was just the first year he was any good. So there's no definition for it. And I know Peter King, who's got one of the votes, said, before Alex Smith even played in a game, all he's got to do is take one snap,
yeah,
and he gets my vote. And I have a feeling a lot of the 50 voters feel the same way.
I'll leave you with this, with a quick response. If Kyler Murray wins the NFC with the Cardinals, dot, dot, dot.
MVP. Oh, without question.
Oh, okay.
MVP. If he's the one seed, and he very well could end up taking the Cardinals to the one seed, but this guy's going to be potentially, and he's on track to be the first player in league history to throw for 4,000 yards and rush for 1,000 yards. Everything he does is exciting. I wish more of his games were on a national platform so we could all appreciate how good he is. I've never seen anyone like him. The combination of speed, agility, and awareness. It is so fun to watch him, and I can't wait to see him on Thursday night. And I hope that we get to see him more times before the end of the season.
Great to talk to you, Mike. Thank you. Coming up next hour, we'll talk to the Indiana head coach, Tom Allen. He's got Ohio State coming up this weekend. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show.